Welcome to Sci-Fi Music with Red, Blue, Black, Silver, recorded in Joshua Tree, California, your weekly exploration of the music in science fiction films, television, radio, podcasts, and other media too. The show is a mixture of the past, present, and future of science fiction music, featuring segments on history, analysis, and sometimes instructions on how to make your own. Thank you for joining me every Sunday night for a journey into the galaxy of science fiction music. Part 2 of the Space Album series does not take place in outer space, rather it is Journey to the Center of the Earth by Rick Wakeman. This 1974 live recording, based on the science fiction novel by Jules Verne, gained unlikely popularity, rising to number 3 on the US Billboard album chart and number 1 in Wakeman's native UK. Also, in this episode, we will discuss his sequel, Return to the Center of the Earth, which was recorded in 1999. Published in 1864, Jules Verne's novel Journey to the Center of the Earth is one of the most famous pieces of science fiction literature of all time. Not only did it influence other novelists like Edgar Rice Burroughs, it was also adapted for the big screen several times. While there were other works pertaining to subterranean exploration, Verne's novel brought additional attention and popularity to the subgenre.
Of arches appearing before them as if they were the aisles of a Gothic cathedral. The walls were enhanced with impressions of rock weeds and mosses from the Silurian epoch.
The novel takes place in 1863 and begins when Professor Lindenbrook discovers writings by an Icelandic alchemist that describe a passage to the Earth's core. Along with his nephew Axel and their guide Hans, on their journey, the team face dehydration, prehistoric creatures, a lightning storm, and a volcano. Verne's plot didn't just appear, it was inspired by Charles Lyell's scientific book Geological Evidences of the Antiquities of Man, published 1 year earlier in 1863. It is noteworthy scientific work because it was a rejection of the literal biblical account of man's history. Rick Wakeman took to eventually record Journey to the Center of the Earth began during his childhood in Great Britain. Ever since his father took him to see Peter and the Wolf as a child, Wakeman had wanted to write music based on a classic story. Wakeman's piano instruction began at age 7, and his lessons with Dorothy Symes lasted until he was 18. Symes entered Wakeman into his first music competition in 1960, paving the way for a career full of awards and accolades. He played in several jazz, blues, and pop groups throughout the mid to late 1960s. He earned money from gigs, which funded the purchase of a Hohner pianette, an electromechanical keyboard, which was the first of many electronic keyboards in his collection.
Cumulus clouds formed heavily in the south, like huge wool packs heaped up in picturesque disorder. Under the influence of the breezes, they merged together, growing darker, forming a single menacing mass. The raft lay motionless on the sluggish, waveless sea. And in silence, they waited for the storm.
Wakeman got a huge break in 1969 when he was offered the chance to play a Mellotron, an electronic keyboard that made sounds by using a series of tape loops emulating the sounds of flutes or strings. He played it on David Bowie's Space Oddity, as well as some other tracks in Bowie's second album. He joined the Straubs later in 1969 until July 1971. While with the Straubs, Wakeman bought his first Moog synthesizer from actor Jack Wilde, who thought it was defective since it only played one note at a time. It was not defective, it was monophonic by design. After leaving the Straubs, Wakeman received a 2 a.m. phone call from the bassist from iconic progressive rock band Yes, with an offer to join the band after the departure of Tony Kaye. Kaye had refused to expand his instrumentation beyond organ and piano, and the band wanted to broaden their horizons. Later in 1971, Yes, with Wakeman on keys, recorded its classic album, Fragile. The opening track on Fragile, Roundabout, remains one of the most recognizable and popular songs by Yes or anyone in the history of progressive rock. Based on the strength of his playing in Fragile, Wakeman scored a 5-album solo deal with A&M Records. By November of that pivotal year of 1971, Wakeman had begun to compose Journey to the Center of the Earth. Even though he recorded the popular tone poem The Six Wives of Henry VIII before the release of Journey to the Center of the Earth in 1973, the adaptation of Burns' novel was on Wakeman's docket from the very beginning of his solo career.
For 4 days the storm had raged as they clung to the mast of their raft for safety. Finally, with their raft wrecked after being bashed against the reefs, they lay sheltered from the pouring rain beneath a few overhanging rocks where they ate and slept. The next day, all trace of the storm had disappeared, and what remained of their stock seemed intact. but checking the compass brought only heartbreak, as it showed that a change of wind during the storm had returned them to just a few miles north of Port Bourbon. So deciding to try and find the original route, they advanced with difficulty over granite fragments mingled with flint, quartz, and alluvial deposits, eventually reaching a plain covered with bones like a huge cemetery. A mile further on, they reached the edge of a huge forest made up of vegetation of the tertiary period. Tall palms were linked by a network of inextricable creepers. A carpet of moss covered the ground, and the leaves were colorless, everything having a brownish hue. Exploring the forest, they discovered a herd of gigantic animals, mastodons, which were being marshaled by a primitive human being, a Proteus.
After performing Tommy, the rock opera by The Who, its producer, Lou Reznor, approached Wakeman about Journey to the Center of the Earth and connected him with David Meesham and Will Malone, who were the conductor and arranger, respectively, of that production of Tommy. Suggestion of Wakeman's manager, Brian Lane, Wakeman decided to use a combination of symphony orchestra, a choir, and a rock band to successfully achieve his musical vision. They selected the London Symphony Orchestra, English Chamber Choir, and a group of rock musicians who would eventually become known as the English Rock Ensemble. They chose actor David Hemmings as the narrator.
Pulling them along at about 3 miles an hour, silvery beams of light reflected here and there by drops of spray produced luminous points in the eddy created by the raft. Soon all land was lost to view. But 5 days out to sea, they witnessed a terrifying battle between two sea monsters. One having the snout of a...
Even live, it cost over £40,000, 1973 pounds, which forced Wakeman to sell some of his cars he bought with his profits from Yes. The pressure was on Wakeman for Journey to the Center of the Earth to be a success. Wakeman recorded a demo outline of Journey to the Center of the Earth with his Moog, Rhodes electric piano, Mellotron, and the instrument we hear now, the Hohner clavinet. Like Wakeman's pianet, his first electronic instrument, the clavinet was also an electromechanical keyboard manufactured by Hohner. Whereas the pianet used sticky pads attached to the keys to vibrate metal reeds, the clavinet had hammers attached to the keys which vibrated steel strings. The clavinet hit its peak popularity in the 1970s, and its staccato tone was used prominently in funk, soul, jazz, and rock albums of that era.
Yeah.
Wakeman's score, co-written by Will Malone and arranger Danny Beckerman, had to cut down from 55 minutes to just over 40 due to the constraints of the vinyl record. Throughout the piece, the opening theme is repeated and redeveloped, adding cohesion and structure to Journey to the Center of the Earth. Like the characters in the novel, the listener is taken on an emotional roller coaster with a broad range of moods from somber to adventurous to triumphant. Wakeman's composition styles include the Baroque and classical elements combined with the pulverizing sound of a hard rock band. Wakeman's combination of centuries-old orchestral parts with the recently invented, at the time, mini-mode was not brand new to devoted fans of progressive rock, but Journey to the Center of the Earth's popularity introduced that combination to millions of new ears. One of Wakeman's often used techniques on the mini-mode was to tune the two oscillators apart by a fourth or a fifth interval. This technique is used on synthesizers, especially analog synthesizers, to this day. In the piece we hear now, this technique allows the mini-mode to sound like it's playing two notes at once despite being a monophonic instrument. Rick Wakeman is one of the pioneers of the instrument, achieving a broad palette of tones and timbres throughout the Journey to the Center of the Earth, and continuing to this day in a career that's produced over 90 solo albums. His work with Yes, and countless other collaborations. Anyone who has worked with the types of keyboards that Rick Wakeman used in this recording knows that it is a technical achievement for them to even function properly. Mellotrons and Moogs are difficult to keep in tune and are sensitive to temperature and humidity changes, while clavinets and Rhodes electric pianos are heavy and fragile. Beyond Wakeman's keyboard rig, the entire recording of Journey to the Center of the Earth was beset by technical issues. Because the London Symphony Orchestra demanded double pay to record the performance twice, allowing them to use the best take of each piece, they had to use one performance for recording. This added to the already massive amount of pressure and Wakeman. Since they used Ronnie Lane's mobile studio, a converted Airstream trailer, they had to run cables from the trailer to the stage. Someone on the street kicked the vocal mic cable immediately prior to the start of the recording. They simply had to boost the gain on all of the microphones that picked up any vocals. Even the simple non-electronic instruments were not immune to breakdown, including the snare drum and its microphone, which broke during the performance. The problems continued when they took the recordings to Morgan Studios in London for processing an additional narrative recording. During one of his sessions, the narrator, David Hemmings, was recording while the tape changed. Still, somehow, Wakeman's audacious gamble paid off with the commercial success of Journey to the Center of the Earth. Just as Jules Verne capitalized on his popular novel by writing a sequel, Return to the Center of the Earth, Wakeman followed suit by recording a musical adaptation to Verne's sequel in 1999. Since David Hemmings had passed away, Patrick Stewart served as narrator, and musical guests ranged from Bonnie Tyler to Ozzy Osbourne. recording Return to the Center of the Earth was not much easier of a process than recording the original. Rick Wakeman suffered from a near-fatal bout of pneumonia and pleurisy, causing the sessions to be delayed while he recovered. Despite budget concerns and against Wakeman's initial preferences, they once again hired the London Symphony Orchestra and the English Chamber Choir to fill out the sound. With over 300 people involved in its creation, Return to the Center of the Earth was every bit the monumental work of art that the original was. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Sci-Fi Music with Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Next week, we will get funky with an examination of the science fiction-themed albums by Parliament and Funkadelic recorded in the 1970s. For local listeners, be sure to mark your calendars for a showing of the Soviet silent science fiction masterpiece, Alita, Queen of Mars, with a live score performed by me. Liftoff is on July 14th at 8 p.m. sharp. This event, produced by my good friends at Space Cowboy Books in Joshua Tree, California, is not to be missed. Until next week, be sure to keep watching, reading, and listening to science fiction.